Hi there, Susan Weeds listeners. You might be thinking, this doesn't sound like Susan's show. And you'd be right, it doesn't. And it isn't. But don't worry, you'll still get to hear 45 minutes of Susan sharing her wisdom later in this episode. This is an episode from one of Susan's former apprentices. Susan has generously donated some of her Blog Talk Radio time to me. In this weekly series, we'll focus on healing after baby loss of any kind, including miscarriage, stillbirth, infant death, giving up a child for adoption, abortion, termination, infertility diagnosis, and the difficult decision to live a child-free life, all with the wise woman way. So, I'm Lindsay. It's nice to meet you, Susan's listeners. If you're in the majority of women and have experienced some sort of baby loss, then I hope what I have to share with you is of interest. If you're not into it, please skip this episode. If you are into it, please tell your friends. Now, on to the first episode. You are listening to Tiny Giant Losses. Tiny Giant Losses is a collection of resources for empowering women to heal after baby loss of any kind. If you've experienced miscarriage, stillbirth, the death of an infant, giving a child up for adoption, termination, infertility diagnosis, or the difficult decision to live a child-free life, then the Tiny Giant Losses podcast is for you. In addition to this podcast, we also offer a variety of resources on Patreon at patreon.com/tinygiantlosses. I've got a lot to share in this week's episode. We'll start with a breathing exercise, then we'll talk about the six steps of healing in the wise woman tradition, and have an interview with an inimitable author, herbalist, and wise woman, Susan Weed. And then at the end, we'll review a baby loss healing resource in under 2 minutes. That's a lot to cover in 1 hour, so let's get started. Let's start the show by doing nothing. That's not the same as not doing anything. It's actually going to be a breathing exercise. More on that later when we talk about the steps of healing. For now, let's start by sitting as upright as possible. Get your spine nice and long. Now ground yourself down by pushing down with your sit bones, pushing your shoulders down, and wherever they are, letting your hands sink down and rest heavily for a moment. If you're driving, you can push them firmly into the wheel. Feel how supported you are by the earth. After a few more moments of really pushing down, slowly let up your pressure a bit. But keep that feeling of settling down into the earth and feeling yourself be supported. Now let's focus on our breath. Take a deep breath in through your mouth or nose. And out through your mouth. In a little deeper this time. And out a little harder, like a sigh or like blowing out a birthday candle. Now in deeply. A little more in. And out all the way. Completely. And in. More. More. And out, out, out. Let it go. Let the tension out of your body. Breathe in deeply. And out completely. And one last time. In comes the breath. Out, out, out goes the tension. Thank you for joining me in the exercise. Even though I'm a little nervous about my first episode, I'm feeling more relaxed, calm, and centered. Take a moment to see how you feel. How's your stress level compared to before? How's your body doing? How are you feeling emotionally and mentally? If you feel an improvement with this breathing exercise, remember that you can listen to this again and again as needed, and you can also do it on your own without guidance. In 2014, I apprenticed with herbalist, author, and wise woman Susan Weed on her land in upstate New York. My apprenticeship with Susan Weed and my training in the Wise Woman tradition was an important part of my own healing after baby loss. When I saw how difficult healing is for women who don't have access to this wisdom, I was inspired to start Tiny Giant Losses, which you can learn more about on Patreon. The Wise Woman tradition is an approach to healing that is rooted in nourishment, love, and the recognition that each person and situation is unique. The focus of this week's episode is an overview of a central concept in the Wise Woman tradition, which is the six steps of healing. The six steps of healing is a simple way to classify any approach to healing and to choose what fits your situation based on the extremity of healing needed to be effective. It includes everything from meditation to support groups to nourishment to prescription drugs and even surgery. Any type of healing modality fits into one, or sometimes more than one, of the steps. When I apprenticed with Susan, I learned that a great way to improve your memory of something is to provide answers to questions about it before you even know the answers. So today we'll prepare for listening to Susan's interview with a few questions. You can pause the podcast to ponder each one if you'd like. Just make sure to at least provide a guess if you'd really like to commit what Susan shares to memory. So, here are the questions. How many steps are in the six steps of healing? What's an example of serenity medicine, or step zero? What's another name for story medicine? What is the shaman's playground? Does lifestyle medicine, aka step three, involve a little or a lot of something? What is the great divide in the steps? Which step is especially useful for herbalists to divide into parts? Why does Susan recommend nourishing herbal infusions? What's Susan's most highly recommended way to fight depression? What does it mean to take a global approach to the six steps of healing? Okay, you've got your questions, you've got some answers. Now let's listen to what Susan has to share. Author, teacher, and wise woman Susan Weed is one of America's best-known authorities on herbal medicine and natural approaches to women's health. Since she began studying herbal medicine more than 50 years ago, Susan has garnered an international reputation for her groundbreaking lectures, teachings, and writings on health and nutrition, which frequently challenge conventional medical approaches and are unabashedly pro-woman. You can check out her books, including my personal favorites, Healing Wise and Wise Woman Herbal for the Childbearing Year, online at herbalmedicinehealing.com. Susan is also my mentor, one of my favorite people, and the woman who made this podcast possible. Like all guests we'll feature on the show, she has personally experienced baby loss. Today we'll be talking with Susan about the six steps of healing, aka the seven rivers of healing. These steps were absolutely essential in my own healing after miscarriage and after my infant son's death, and I believe that they will be very powerful tools for each of you listeners, too. Susan, welcome. Thank you for joining me in the first episode of the Tiny Giant Losses podcast and for being such a big part of it coming into being.
Thank you so much, and green blessings to you and all of the listeners, Lindsay.
And to you. Thank you. Now, you've spoken on the steps of healing to many, many people around the world. So although the show will normally have more of a Q&A format, this is going to be more of a discussion between two women who are really passionate about the steps of healing. Susan, would you like to start us off with a quick overview of what the steps of healing are before we go into each one?
Absolutely. And sometimes I call it the six steps of healing, mm-hmm. and sometimes I call it the seven medicines of the seven rivers of healing. Mm. And people sometimes look at me and say, well, how come in one it's six and the other it's seven? And that's because when it's the six steps of healing, which you will find in each one of my books, it starts with step zero, do nothing.
Mm.
And so the last one is step six. There really are seven steps if you start with zero and end with six. But I have convinced editors throughout my career that to say the seven steps of healing and have it end with six would be confusing to people. So I managed to hold that with the six steps of healing. But there really are seven. Mm-hmm. And the seven medicines are serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, lifestyle medicine, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and high-tech medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Started working with these seven medicines before I ever wrote my first book, because really the first book that I did was for somebody else. A woman's health clinic in New York City had been in operation for close to a decade, and they had a bunch of file cards with their remedies. So if somebody came in with a bladder infection, they could go to their, you know, file card, and they could look, and they could see what remedies they had. But it was getting kind of awkward for them. And they wanted to know if I could just take these remedies and put them in book format for them.
Mm-hmm.
And so they made copies of all these file cards for me, and I'm sitting here, you know, surrounded by all this information, and I realized I needed an ordering system.
Mm.
And to have some way to present this information that wasn't just a bowl of salad, that it had components and that people could say, oh, you know, nipple stimulation to bring on labor is going to be as effective and safer than drinking castor oil and vodka and orange juice.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I started thinking along these lines. First of all, I asked myself if there was any statement about healing that every person on the planet would agree to. Yes, I always ask myself enormous questions. And in fact, the statement that I came up with is a statement that doctors swear to when they become doctors, and I have yet to have anybody say, no, I don't agree with that. And the statement is, first, do no harm.
Mm.
It seems to be pretty universally accepted that if we're going to engage ourselves as healers, the very first thing we should do is not hurt people.
Yeah.
They come to us sick. They come to us hurt. They come to us injured. And those are emotional, psychic, physical, social injuries and hurts. And without care, we can add to that burden of hurt and pain.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So I asked myself, of these remedies that I was surrounded with, which were the gentlest and the safest? And which were the ones that were more dangerous? And I defined danger as something that could cause death or permanent injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I defined non-danger as something that would never hurt you. That basically there was no recovery period from. So serenity medicine, the very first medicine, is such a medicine. No one is going to be hurt by serenity medicine. If I say to you, your blood pressure is high, and if you do alternate nostril breath for 3 minutes a day for the next month, that will reduce your blood pressure as well as these drugs that I can give you,
mm-hmm.
then I have given that person a clear option. This serenity medicine won't cause any harm, and it will help in a great many other ways as well, whereas we can give you drugs, such as pharmaceutical medicine, to lower your blood pressure, and it will have side effects that are not good for your body.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I recently met an MD who just unequivocally said, anyone who takes a drug to lower their blood pressure is crazy.
That's quite a strong statement.
Non-drug ways work better and faster.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we both agreed that if somebody had dangerously high blood pressure, like 180 over 120, that possibly, you know, some emergency thing might be needed.
Mm-hmm.
So if we do find ourselves entering the steps of healing at pharmaceutical medicine or high-tech medicine, and sometimes when a woman has a giant, tiny loss, that is where she enters.
Yes.
She suddenly finds herself being, you know, in a hospital with procedures being done or being given drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And so then our goal is to go back.
Yeah.
And what I have found is that when we go all the way back to step zero to do nothing, we have come back to wholeness and health.
Mm-hmm.
And if we just leave a woman there with a vacuum aspiration or with a C-section of a dead baby, that she never has an opportunity to feel that she's truly healed.
Yes, absolutely.
She's left there in the seventh river, which is a very dangerous river.
Mm.
The second river is story medicine. Mm-hmm. In the steps of healing, that's step number one, and that's collect information. So in serenity medicine, we are with ourselves. And if there's any other information coming into us, it's information from the universe. It's information from fundamental consciousness. It's information from our wisest self. Mm. When we seek information, we now engage others. We say to someone else, what do you think about this? Mm-hmm. And what we need to be very clear about is that each person who tells us what they think is going on with us has a story that they are operating from.
And sometimes those can be dangerous stories when it comes to baby loss.
They can be stories that lead us to be afraid. Mm-hmm. Personally, have noticed that I don't make good decisions when I'm afraid.
Yeah. Same here.
In fact, I've never met anyone who says to me, oh, I make wonderful decisions when I'm frightened. No, most of us say, oh, you know, wow, if I hadn't been so frightened, I wouldn't have done that. Mm-hmm. So, for instance, if a woman has a lump in her breast and there's a goes for a mammogram and says, well, there's something suspicious, you need to have a surgery tomorrow, that's frightening.
Yes.
Instead of saying the truth to that woman, which is, you can take 2 to 4 weeks to decide on what you want to do next.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's very important to understand that there are different stories. And often people say, well, I got a second opinion. But their second opinion was from a friend of their doctor, another doctor who went to school with them. They have the same story.
Mm-hmm.
If we want to get a really different opinion, we would go to somebody who has a totally different story. So we go to a regular MD, and the regular MD might say, we don't see a heartbeat on the sonogram. Your baby is dead. That baby could rot in you and cause you to die, so we want to do a extraction.
Mm-hmm.
And the woman is frightened and agrees to do that, and then later feels like, oh, I didn't really have a chance to mourn or to really deal with it.
Yeah.
Whereas if she went, for instance, to a midwife, the midwife might say to her, doctors are frightened that the baby will rot in you, but that's never happened. I've never seen it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen women have a baby die at 6 or 7 months and go to term and deliver that dead baby.
Yeah. And have that opportunity to grieve.
And have that opportunity to let your body take care of it in its own way, and to, yes, fill those days with your grief.
Mm-hmm.
The woman that I'm specifically thinking of, whose baby died at about 7.5 months and went on to deliver on her due date, she and her family, during those 6 weeks, made a coffin for the baby.
Mm, that's beautiful.
Decided where the baby was going to be buried.
Mm-hmm.
Did a ceremony for the baby. They decided to bury it along the path to the outhouse so they could walk by it every single day.
Oh.
The youngest child found a rock in the shape of a heart. So the entire family had that opportunity to memorialize and to be with their grief so that by the time the baby was born, it was almost a celebration.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so through taking the time that they need, which is, again, step zero in the 6 steps, and through collecting information in a way that is healing for them, they were able to have this time, they were able to do the things that they found to be appropriate, and they were also able to move on to their own story with it.
And to work with mind medicine.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
The baby by the path where we go to the outhouse that we see her every day, that's mind medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Mind medicine is belief medicine. It's energy medicine. It's that intangible quality. And I often call it the shaman's playground.
Mm.
Mind medicine can be homeopathic remedies. It can be flower essences. It can be a bottle of water with a word written on it. It can be a ceremony. There's so many ways to engage mind medicine. Prayer, Reiki, distance healing, all of these things. I'm thinking of a woman who came to me who really wanted to get pregnant, and she didn't feel that she deserved to get pregnant because she had had 6 prior abortions.
Mm-hmm.
And she had never really given herself grief space for those abortions because every one of them was a place in her life where it just would have been horrible.
Yeah.
For her to have a baby. And she said, but I'm sure all those babies blame me and they won't let me get pregnant. And I said, let's check this out. So we did a trance. This is part of mind medicine. We can use our minds to imagine things. Mm-hmm. We did a trance, and we imagined that she was sitting talking to the first baby that she aborted. Mm. And that baby said to her, "I don't know why you're carrying on like this. I have no blame at all for what you did. I would not have wanted to come to you at that time."
Yeah.
And we went to the second baby. And the second baby said basically the same thing, except it was clear to us that the second baby was the first baby.
Mm.
And we specifically said, "Are you the same entity?" He said, "Well, of course." And by the time we talked to the third one, which again was the same entity, we said, "What's going on here?" "Well, I'm your child. I'm going to be as many times as you get pregnant, I will come to you. Would you get pregnant again? I'd like to be your child."
Ah, that's beautiful.
Yeah, so mind medicine, that power to imagine, that power to put ourselves out of just reality. Dead mm-hmm. babies can't talk to you? What are you crazy, Susan? No, we're not crazy. We're engaging in mind medicine.
Yeah.
We're engaging in that wonderful facility that humans have to imagine things.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that imagining, we know, can have incredible results. I used to tell a very old story about a man who was told that there was this new drug that could cure lung cancer. He took it cured his lung cancer. Decades later, over 25 years later, he read in the newspaper that that drug had been found to be useless. He died of his lung cancer within the week.
Yeah, our beliefs do play so heavily into what happens with our bodies,
right.
Our
that's
minds.
That's an old story, and I just read a recent story in which a man enrolled, this just happened last year, he enrolled in a double-blind study.
Mm-hmm.
And every time he took the pill, he said, "This is the drug, and it is getting rid of my lung cancer." He was taking the placebo, but it got rid of his lung cancer because he engaged mind medicine.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He engaged his belief. He engaged his ability to have his body do what he was imagining.
Mm-hmm.
Because your body wants to do what you imagine.
Mm. Mm.
That doesn't mean that we can go back and change the past.
Right.
We cannot reimagine what has happened in the past. I'm not saying we can go back and we will be pregnant again if we lost a child. No, you can get pregnant again, but it is going to be different. You're not going to magically reinstate your pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Loss is loss, and we can't change that loss. We can change our relationship to it.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Or as one very wise teacher once said to me, once you are in a body, pain is inevitable.
Mm-hmm.
But suffering is your choice.
Yes.
And suffering is about what we're imagining.
Mm.
The woman who had aborted six times was causing great suffering to herself for blaming herself.
Yeah.
Because her story was that she had somehow done something inappropriate or wrong. And when she talked to the baby said, "You know, we're in no time. Time doesn't matter to us." And the last baby said, "This life, next life, whatever life, I'm your child. I'm coming to you." So then we move to lifestyle medicine. Now, let's also notice that it's serenity medicine. No one is touching us.
Mm-hmm.
At story medicine, no one is touching us, but they are talking to us.
Mm-hmm.
Or if they are touching us, it is light examining touches. And this is a dangerous place. Because when we go to modern medical practitioners to ask for a diagnosis, sometimes it's like a game of chutes and ladders.
Mm-hmm.
We should be in a safe place being touched only lightly. Suddenly, we are swept down the chute to high-tech medicine.
Mm-hmm.
And we are being examined by high-tech things. I was just with a woman who was having some chest pain, and they said, "We'd like to do a dye contrast catheterization so that we can see your blood vessels going to your heart." And she said, "Well, when my dad had that done, and the contrast dye that they used caused his kidney to fail, so please don't use that dye for me." They disregarded her, used that dye, and she now has only one kidney.
Oh, my gosh.
To collect information, which should be a safe step.
Mm-hmm.
So we must be careful when we are engaging in story medicine that we do not agree to jump on to the slide that takes us down to high-tech medicine.
Mm-hmm.
a women's health clinic that I support with donations. Quite a few years ago, I sent out a special request for people to donate so that they could get imaging equipment. And I wrote back and said, for the amount of money you're spending for the imaging equipment, you could hire a woman with psychic abilities to give you this information, and you could hire her for 6 or 7 years for the amount you're going to spend for a machine, which is going to be antiquated and not useful after 6 or 7 years.
Yeah.
And they wrote back, you're absolutely right, but no one would believe her. Yeah, huh? So we have to consider that too, right? What do we believe? Do we only believe something a machine has said? So at the mind medicine, we are ingesting things. We might ingest a homeopathic remedy. We might ingest a color light shining on our skin.
Mm-hmm.
Might actually have light touch applied, as in bioenergetics or Reiki, where hands are placed on the body, but not to manipulate the body. When we move to lifestyle medicine, our physical contact increases. We are now not just taking a little bit of something, we are eating large quantities of something. We are feeding ourselves. We are not being touched lightly. We are moving ourselves. So there is very strong physical contact with ourselves.
Yeah, so for example, yoga,
where there's strong physical contact with someone else, we've moved to alternative medicine. And between lifestyle medicine and alternative medicine is a great divide. The first four medicines, serenity medicine, story medicine, mind medicine, and lifestyle medicine, always make us healthier. These medicines are quite capable of relieving pain, dealing with problems, restoring our health to us, but they also help us to maintain health. So we regain and maintain health whenever we are engaging in the first four medicines. The last three medicines, alternative medicine, pharmaceutical medicine, and high-tech medicine, always injure and erode our health.
And yet sometimes some of these steps may be necessary for women who are experiencing or have experienced baby loss.
Exactly. That's why there's seven medicines. Those medicines, but neither are we going to choose to start there.
Right.
If we have a choice, we want to start with serenity medicine. We don't always have a choice. Certainly, if I'm at a birth and a woman is hemorrhaging, I'm not going to stand there and lecture her on nettle infusions. Nor am I going to go in the kitchen and set up a nettle infusion, which won't be ready for 4 hours.
Right.
I'm going to give her a dropper full of shepherd's first tincture under her tongue and stop the bleeding. Then we can set up a quart of nettle infusion. So in the six steps, the fifth medicine is step four, stimulate and sedate. And stimulate and sedate has a great number of different ways we can do it. We can do it with chiropractic. We can do it with massage. We can do it with hydrotherapy. We can do it with herbs. There's a great span. We can do it with acupuncture of alternative medicine techniques whose goal is to stimulate where energy is low and sedate where energy is too high. Whose goal is to calm things that are hyper and bring up things that are hypo. And this, of course, merges gradually off into drugs, many of which have the same goal. And it can be very useful, especially as herbalists, for us to divide up the fourth step, stimulate and sedate, into 4.1, 4.2, and so on down, so that at 4.9, we have use opium poppy. And at 4.9 and a half, we'd have use opium, and at 4 and at 5, we would have use a drug made from opium.
Right.
So we can see that chamomile tea or catnip tincture or skullcap tincture would be far safer than using opium. But California poppy is far safer than poppy too. This, of course, this is the skill of the herbalist. I often say that as an herbalist, I feel that I've come to first grade with the box of 72 crayons with the sharpener. The bees get to come to class with the box of 8 crayons.
Yeah, there is quite a bit of nuance within step four that I experienced after the loss of my infant son. Sometimes I was working with lemon balm tincture. Sometimes I was working with motherwort tincture. And they each have their own sort of flavor, if you will, and particular effect within that realm of sedation.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's a lot to be said. I have had some people who are horrified that I say that alternative medicine will erode health. And we can see that certainly one of the things that I did as an herbalist was to pick out the herbs that won't cause harm, which are the nourishing herbs, and to bring those into lifestyle medicine with nourishing herbal infusions.
Mm.
And I often say that I've had three good ideas in my 70 years on the planet. The seven medicines is one of my best ideas. And the three traditions of healing, the scientific tradition, which measures and fixes, the heroic tradition, which strives to balance and cleanse, neither of which can be done, and the wise woman tradition, which nourishes wholeness. And, of course, my very, very best idea, which is the nourishing herbal infusions are part of lifestyle medicine. And to my mind, they are the fundament for a healthy diet.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, one of the things that I found out pretty quickly as I began to counsel with people is that the vast, vast majority of people will tell you they'll change their diet but won't. Or they will for a short amount of time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But many more people will actually work with nourishing herbal infusions. And once you start working with those nourishing herbal infusions, your taste buds become well nourished, and you can no longer eat things that aren't healthy for you.
Yeah, I personally experienced this, and I've seen my husband go through the same thing as well. Our tastes in food completely changed when we started drinking nourishing herbal infusions on a regular basis. And for the listeners, that's something you can learn a lot more about if you look up Susan Weed's YouTube channel.
Yes, I have a whole series of YouTubes showing me making nourishing herbal infusions and talking about them and talking about the herbs that we use. The five that I use most commonly are stinging nettle, oat straw, red clover, comfrey leaf, and linden.
Mm.
Moving then from using nourishing herbal infusions in our lifestyle, we also want to look at lifestyle in terms of movement. We all know that our bodies are designed to move, but there's some, I think, experiments that really put a exclamation point after this. They took young, healthy men in college age, so they were in their late teens, early 20s, and they put them in bed for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Bed rest for 2 weeks. Hey, sounds like fun, right? Sit around, eat bonbons, watch TV, read, play computer games, all right. They followed those men, and the damage that occurred to their blood vessels was still evident 25 years later.
Wow.
This is one of the reasons. Do you remember, like, even 20 years ago, if somebody had a heart attack, they'd be in the hospital for quite a while.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we take people in the hospital, we do what we need to do. We say, go out for a walk. Get out of bed.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You see people in hospitals, you know, rolling their IVs with them so that they can get up and walk, because we now know that movement is the great key to healing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I talk about blood vessels because the blood vessels carry nourishment and oxygen to every single cell. And if the lining of the blood vessels is stiff, then the blood vessels can't operate delivering that nutrition to every cell. And blood vessels stiffen up measurably within 1 hour of inactivity.
Wow.
Yeah. So you know that I have my Fitbit. I love my Fitbit because I love numbers. And so I'll look at my Fitbit and I'll say, oh, I can't sit down. I've only, you know, walked 3,000 steps today. I have to go out for a walk before I can sit down tonight.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Or, oh, I can't have dessert tonight. I've only burned 1,200 calories. If I expect dessert, I better go for a run. So it really helps me because I can gauge myself at that. But my daughter hates it because she doesn't like looking at the numbers. And so she got a Misfit, mm-hmm. which looks like a watch, and it has a little light at each hour. And if you have been physically active enough in that hour, that little light lights up for you.
Ah, interesting.
So she can just look at her watch and go, uh-oh, no light. I have to get up from my computer and do something.
Uh-huh.
So, and I do find there's a reason why these fitness trackers are such large sellers. They really do help us set goals and achieve those goals. Now, it comes with a goal of doing 10,000 steps a day, and I soon learned that if I did 10,000 steps a day, I wasn't doing anything else. You know, that's over 4 miles. That's a lot for me. So I brought my goal down to 6,000 steps a day, which is something I can do. Sometimes it takes effort, but I can do it.
Mm-hmm.
So I also suggest to people not to go to somebody else's goal, but set your own goal, even if it's only 2,000 or 3,000 steps a day. Set that goal, meet that goal, and then you can gradually enlarge your goal. Now, if I have a day where I do 10,000 steps, I can do something else that day. Now I even have days where I walk 5 or 6 miles if it's a busy, active class day.
Oh. And it seems like with tools like this, it's much easier to integrate it into your overall lifestyle. It's not so much about, say, going to the gym for an hour as it is about making physical activity a regular part of your life in the everyday sense of just activities of walking from point A to point B, climbing the stairs instead of taking the elevator, this kind of thing, which seems a lot more sustainable in one's life.
And one of the problems that we can have when we have had a giant, tiny loss is depression.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And that can take many forms. That can take the form of, I'm going to crawl under the bed and eat worms, major depression, to I'm just really not very interested in anything, but I'll, you know, pretend, kind of a, you know, moderate depression, to I'm just fine, but you don't do anything and you don't feel like eating and your sleep is disturbed, and that's still depression.
Yeah.
And we know that the greatest, easiest, most effective way to counter all states of depression is to be active.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
In fact, when we sleep, our brain makes depressive substances. That's why we don't move when we're sleeping. And so the more we sleep, the more depressed we get. So it is a direct counter to the depressive states that we can enter into when we need to be grieving.
Mm-hmm.
Grief is an active state. Depression is an inactive state.
Mm-hmm.
And lifestyle medicine, drinking the infusions and moving in whatever way pleases you, is, to my mind, one of the best ways to be sure that we move into grief and don't get stalled out in depression.
Mm-hmm.
I was teaching a workshop, and there was a woman there whose 16-year-old daughter had been just senselessly gunned down on the city street.
Oh.
And the mother fell into a deep depression. In 16 years, she was in this depression.
Wow. Yeah, that's hard.
And she told us that in the 16th year, she had a dream, and her daughter came to her in the dream and said, Mother, I am standing in a line that is miles long, hoping to get a new body. You have one. Enjoy it.
And that's good mind medicine.
Now, that's pretty potent mind medicine, isn't it? It kicks off into, wow, all right, you know. And who am I helping by being depressed and not bringing my daughter back?
Yeah. Yeah, I find that a lot of parents...
You're not helping me.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe that line, miles and miles long, is what the Catholic Church calls purgatory. You're just waiting. And what do they say? They say you have to pray for people who are in purgatory. We have to send them good thoughts.
Yeah.
Not depression, not boo-hoo-hoo. Grief is wonderful. And we're all for grief, but depression doesn't take us anywhere. Grief can take us somewhere.
Right, right. And we work with the stages and the emotions associated with that. We can move through and find healing.
Exactly. We will always feel that grief. I will always grieve for the ghosts that I lost in my barn fire.
Mm, yeah.
And that grief will come up in odd times and places, even if you think, oh, I'm healed from the grief. You know, I thought, okay, well, it's been a year now. We've rebuilt the barn. I'm ready to get new goats. As soon as the new goats got here, I was plunged back into grief because mm-hmm. they weren't my old goats.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It became obvious that my old goats weren't coming back. Somehow, in my magical thinking mind, the new goats were going to turn into the old goats when they got there.
Yeah. And that can happen with rainbow pregnancies as well.
We don't know below, at the level below consciousness what kinds of things we're thinking. Mm-hmm. So I always say to people, you will heal from grief, but that doesn't mean that it won't be available to you.
Yeah.
You will always know what you have lost, and you will always feel that love. However, we do need to remember that the heart is a soft organ and it can't break.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that can break are the barriers around the heart to love.
Yeah.
And so we tell ourselves the story about our grief, that that grief is breaking the barriers that prevent us from fully experiencing love.
Mm, so beautiful.
And the more we are grieving something we've lost that we love, the greater our opportunity to love more.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if we don't become depressed, which means shut down and say, I will never love again.
Yeah.
Yeah. I certainly felt like that when my man partners left me. I was plunged into despair, but I couldn't afford depression because they left me in the middle of the winter and then the intake line to the water froze.
Oh, no.
So I had to jump into action. I simply could not afford to be depressed. I literally would have died.
Yeah. Right?
And so I found, you know, the companion, which is despair, which kind of lies between the grief and the depression.
Mm-hmm.
But at least most of us, when we're despairing, can be functional and can move ourselves to grief from that place. So pharmaceutical medicine would say you need to take drugs which will change your despair or your depression or your grief. And, of course, we talked about the possibility that a woman experiencing a loss might be swept into a surgical procedure or drugs, and that what she then wants to do is to come back to alternative medicine. When I had my hernia repaired, I know it's not as invasive as some of the things that might happen to us when we're experiencing a giant, tiny loss. But nonetheless, it is invasive surgery. My body was furious at me.
Yeah.
I wasn't prepared for how furious my body was at me. And it said to me, you let people cut me with sharp things. You're supposed to protect me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm so mad at you. And I said, I hear you. Let's go get you a massage.
Yeah.
And so this is how, okay, back to the fourth step of healing.
Mm-hmm.
I've been in the sixth step of healing. I'm not going to be taking drugs. They offered me pain pills. I'm not going to be doing that. But I'll go back to the fourth step of healing. I'll use herbs to counter the pain. I'll get a massage. And then when I have moved through the healing from this, then I'm back to lifestyle medicine. Although, of course, I can be doing lifestyle medicine, energy medicine, story medicine, and serenity medicine at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So what I'm hearing is after surgery,
by saying that we don't have to separate out the steps, we can do it globally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I don't know if you ever met my dear friend Kialis. But Kialis is a very large woman. She weighed over 300 pounds, and she was gaining a little weight here and there, and she didn't think anything of it. And then she went to the doctor, and the doctor says, oh, my gosh, you have a 20-pound fibroid laying on top of your uterus.
Wow.
Yeah, most of us would notice that we have a 20-pound fibroid, but when you're over 300 pounds, another 20 pounds, it's not as much as if you weigh 150 pounds. So the doctor said, well, this is, you know, terribly dangerous because the fibroid can burst and you can bleed to death. And because it's above your uterus, you won't even get a bloody show. You'll just bleed to death and fall down and you'll be dead. Nobody will know what happened. We have to remove your uterus and this fibroid immediately. I'm scheduling you for surgery in 5 days. And what she did was a global plan of action here.
Mm-hmm.
She started meditating more each day and getting in touch with her fundamental consciousness to help her move through it. She said, this is your story. My uterus has to be removed. Are there any other stories? And she found a story in which the uterus could be removed rather than an open frank incision. It can be removed vaginally.
Mm-hmm.
And she said to the surgeon, this is what I want. He said, we can't do that because what if the fibroid breaks while I'm pulling your uterus out? I won't be able to see it. We won't see the blood. You could die right there on the operating table. I'm too frightened to do that. And because of her size, they wanted to cut her from her pubic bone to her sternum and from one hip to the other.
Wow.
To get in there.
Yeah.
We're talking major, massive surgery. Mm-hmm. She really wanted to avoid it.
Mm-hmm.
She engaged the energy by picking seven friends, each of whom was to light a candle of a specific color to guard her chakra while she was under.
Yeah.
And she interviewed anesthesiologists.
Mm-hmm.
It's a joke, but it's a true joke. The patient says, I'm so worried about the operation. And the anesthesiologist says, oh, the operation's a snap, but the anesthesia could kill you.
Yeah. It's funny because it's true.
Funny because it's true. The
yeah.
anesthesiologist is perhaps more important than the surgeon.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They have to know, and especially if you're a woman, the drugs don't work the same for women, and women are often brought to a state where they are fully conscious and fully feeling the pain, but can't move or speak or let anybody know what's going on.
Terrifying. Wow.
Because the anesthesia drugs do not work the same for women as they do for men.
Mm-hmm.
And as she was being wheeled into surgery, she said to the surgeon, as soon as she got into surgery, she said to the surgeon, put your hand where the fibroid is. The surgeon put his hand there, and she said, close your eyes. She said, and together we're going to tell this not to break, and you're going to take my uterus vaginally. And he said, would somebody sedate this woman? But he did indeed remove her uterus vaginally.
Wow.
And the fibroid did not break. So she was able to engage his energy
mm-hmm.
and his medicine, his mind medicine, so that he could feel, sense, intuit, and trust.
Yeah.
Globally.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
She didn't have time to say, oh, well, I'll do serenity medicine for a month and see what happens. But she engaged all of the steps in a global fashion.
Something that I find very interesting about this particular story is that I'm hearing a lot of very warranted and also very lavish self-care. She really took every step necessary to make sure that she got through everything in the way that she wanted to. And she didn't
yes,
just hand that over.
Yes, by common rights, we could call it lavish, but it's not really lavish. It really, really is the self-care that we deserve. Or
mm-hmm.
as I say to people, take care of yourself the way you would take care of the person that you love the most. Take
yes.
care of yourself and the way that you would take care of your most prized possession.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Yeah, we're often so hesitant to do that or afraid we don't deserve it, but we do. We really do.
And this is why the Wise Woman tradition is based on self-acceptance and self-love.
Mm.
Because that's where we nourish ourselves, is when we are accepting ourselves and loving ourselves.
Yes. So I think that's a great sort of summary of the steps of healing, of the seven rivers.
And that was our goal here, was to
yeah.
get your wonderful blog talk show off to a start with a general idea of what you're doing and the many, many ways that we have to regain and to maintain health and to move through the losses that life will give us.
Yes, exactly. And listeners, I'll be going into more detail on each of the steps here on the podcast in the coming weeks. Be sure to subscribe if you'd like to continue learning about this incredibly effective and straightforward approach to healing. And of course, you can learn more about the Wise Woman tradition and ask Susan questions on her Blog Talk radio show, which is called Ask Herbal Health Expert Susan Weed, as well as through her website, which is susanweed.com. Susan spells her first name S-U-S-U-N. Is there anything else you'd like to add before we wrap up the interview, Susan?
The number for that Blog Talk show will be posted at Facebook every Tuesday. And the Blog Talk show is Tuesday evening. I know for those of you in Europe, it means staying up kind of late. But we got a call, in fact, from somebody in, I think it was Germany last week, and she said, I just took a nap and set the alarm and woke up. So it starts at 7:30 my time, and that would be 1:30 for most of Europe. Some of it only 12:30. So take that nap, stay up late, call into the show. I answer questions for an hour and a half, and then we interview a fascinating person for the last half hour of the show. And if you don't want to stay up, but you just want to listen to back issues, as it were, it is podcast, and you can find all of those back issues podcasts.
Yes, and it is such a fantastic resource. Thank you, Susan, for joining me and for sharing your wisdom on tiny giant losses this week.
Thank you, Lindsay, for making this available for all of us. Remember, everybody, herbal medicine is people's medicine. It's the medicine that grows right outside your door. Green blessing, Lindsay. I love you, sir.
I love you too, Susan. And now it's time for our weekly two-minute review. Today's review is of the book Grieving Parents, Surviving Loss as a Couple. I was fortunate enough to hear the book's author, Natalie Himmelrich, speak at an international conference of the Compassionate Friends in Frankfurt this summer. The Compassionate Friends is a network for bereaved parents of children of any age. If I had to sum up the book in one sentence, I'd say, powerful tools for working through your grief together as a team, even when you are grieving in different ways. But I don't have to sum it up in just one sentence, so I'll tell you more about it. Before writing this book, Natalie lost one of her twin girls shortly after their birth, and that loss was followed by the suicide of her mother. Prior to these losses, she worked as a grief therapist. As you might guess, she has a lot to share. Grieving Parents goes into detail about healing as a couple through allowing, awareness, acknowledging, adjusting, absorbing, and integrating. It covers what grief looks like, some of the major grief theories, and what that means for your healing. Natalie also talks about supporting yourself, supporting each other, and getting the support you need from outside of your relationship. She even goes into one of my favorite topics, creating meaning following a loss. Her warmth and wisdom shines through her book throughout, and, as though all her personal and professional insights weren't enough, she also interviewed couples and shared their perspectives on loss and healing as part of the book, too. One of my favorite insights she shared from the interviews is some of the ways in which couples may change after losing a child, usually more willing to accept help, more grateful for it, clearer about their own priorities, and way less willing to take anyone's BS. I don't know about you, but that sounds very familiar for me. I strongly recommend Grieving Parents, Surviving Loss as a Couple to any open-minded couple seeking healing after baby loss. Trigger warnings for those who may need them. This book discusses the suicide of a family member and discusses acceptance as part of the healing process. While I'm all about acceptance, I realize that it's a common trigger. In fact, two people in Natalie's workshop I attended spoke about being triggered by the idea of acceptance. So, just saying, if it's triggering for you, then hold off on reading this book for a while. Next week, we'll have the pleasure of interviewing Natalie Himmelrich here on the show. And, as part of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, October, we'll share a special announcement about her work on the show then, so be sure to subscribe and hear it next week. Next week, we'll also review a film with a similar message, but with more time spent on the discord that can occur in a marriage after child loss. That's right, we'll talk about Rabbit Hole, starring Nicole Kidman, Aaron Eckhart, and Diane Weiss. So check back then, or go ahead and subscribe if you're not already subscribed. Thank you for joining me for the first ever Tiny Giant Losses podcast. If you found this episode to be healing, subscribe today or check back each week for new episodes. You can learn more about Tiny Giant Losses and find many more resources to empower your healing journey, including a blog post on the steps of healing, at patreon.com/tinygiantlosses.